I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. Topic for today, global strategic planning. What are the 10 top considerations? My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump into our topic. For those of you joining us for the very first time, at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement to help keep organizations off the rocks of potential self-destruction. Lighthouses have this romantic thing, but reality is it's to warn them from going on the rocks. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to help raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, leadership training for the 21st century, exploring global options for expanding your business, sales and customer service training, and operational productivity improvement. Also, Tom, who will be doing our program today as our guest, specializes also in not only global expansion, but he can look at safety issues that might come up and diving really deep into organizations to make sure they're in compliance and doing things from an ethical and moral standpoint across the board and knowing how to work with those cultures to keep it all moving forward. Each of our programs helps to avoid getting stuck in shallow waters so our clients have smooth sailing. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. If you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is a response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program on your screen. You'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. Also, you'll be receiving a recording and the PowerPoint slides from today. If you want to share those with others within your association or other friends within business, please feel free to do so. I want to introduce our guest. Tom, I don't even know where to begin. Tom Drucker. Tom is not only a cool guy, close friend, an amazing business person, and we're very fortunate to have Tom as a senior Lighthouse consultant. And he truly is a global thinker that translates into bottom-line success for those that work with Tom. Tom works with leaders to achieve business success by leveraging the strengths of their people and overcoming the very human yet often unseen obstacles that get in their way. Tom has a degree in both psychology and business from UCLA and blends these skills to deliver usable insights that have lasting impacts on their business and, most importantly, on the hearts and minds of the people that he works with. Tom has well over 30 years of experience working with Fortune 500 companies, mid-caps, startups, and you name it, Tom has done it from manufacturing to service companies. I'm just privileged and feel privileged to have Tom with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, at the end of the program, registration will take place for our next program, and the title is Your Hiring Kit Complete? Tom, I want to welcome you.
Well, thank you, Dana, for that kind introduction. And I'll also say that if people on this call want to have a dialogue, what Dana does is he turns off the recording when we're finished with the slides so that we can have a so-called, non-recorded conversation. So, but do please type your questions in, since I don't know who's on the line, and it's at this point my least favorite kind of communication, which is one way. I'm going to respond to the topic with some issues, some examples. Hopefully we'll have some fun with those as you kind of map your own experiences onto some of the things we'll be talking about. Let's see, just to give you a little bit more background, I, as Dana said, I have a degree in psychology. Then I went to the business school because the people that I was studying positive psychology with felt that I would be more satisfied and more kind of excited about working to help large groups of people optimize human performance through their work. And so that's really what I went to the business school to study. And then through a series of circumstances, Xerox hired me right out of the business school to work in the office of the chairman and president to help them design strategies, leadership training, and mechanisms to deliver that organizational improvement as they moved from the analog to the digital world. Peter McCullough, who I worked for, was a chairman at the time, and he was a great visionary. In fact, if you think about the networks that we use today and the way in which they work so seamlessly, Peter actually started to build the first satellite-based network in the early 70s. So he was a pioneer in that area and certainly was my guru of technology. He sent me to the Palo Alto Research Center where I learned some valuable lessons. I had a desk there and a desk in their corporate headquarters, and I spent most of my time elsewhere around the world. So I've been in this field of kind of integrating local plans into global plans and how they intersect. So let's just dive into the issues, some pretty obvious things that are important. But again, I'm obligated, I think, by Dana's invitation and not knowing who I'm talking to just remind you of some basics that you probably know. Planning to be effective, whatever kind of planning it is, needs to be a process. It's an ongoing process, not an event. By a dynamic document, I mean one that's updated frequently, something that people use to guide decisions, and not just something that is done once a year as a corporate exercise. And global planning requires an unbiased examination of, you know, your current sales and distribution strategies if it is onshore, what your actual costs of manufacturing are, true costs, and then to begin to think about what your strengths and weaknesses are, your core competencies, as you begin to think about going abroad and what the benefits of that would be and what the jeopardies and costs and so forth like that. So it's not a simple process necessarily, although the elements are pretty straightforward, but some companies, as we'll see later, need some guidance.
A question just came in.
Sure.
Regarding these first two issues. If a firm is operating in their current state today, how do they examine operations and the readiness?
That's a great question. Again, depending on the size of the firm or what you do, the easiest way to do it, and you really don't need someone like me or other consultants to help you with this, you can get some smart people in a room and you can say to them, do a SWOT analysis. Google that. It's strengths, opportunities, weaknesses, and threats. And you can just kind of brainstorm how you would fill out those answers. And then you'd say, and if we did X, like if we thought about expanding globally, what would that do to the way we see our company today? What are the gaps between where we are and what we think we would need? You could kind of do that in-house as a as an exercise for a few hours or more thoroughly for a day or so, and then reflect on what you learned. You could bring in someone like myself, people that have had global experience and understand how to guide you through the process. I'm not here, of course, selling myself, but sometimes if you find yourself very inwardly focused, it's good to have another set of eyes that's got some experience and no vested interest in what decision, you know, a particular firm comes out with. But you can start pretty much on your own by doing that kind of SWOT analysis.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Should you go to the next slide?
Sure.
Okay. Issue 3 and 4.
Yeah, so don't assume your business model can just be replicated or exported. You might have a very very well-established business model. You might have a great brand. There's a fairly well-known story about Harley-Davidson, which is, of course, a solid gold brand here in the U.S., and they thought with motorcycles just increasing and scooters just exponentially increasing in the Japanese and Asian markets that they could just kind of waltz in there and their brand would take the, you know, the market share it deserved. And they got their, whatever you would call, handed to them by the, particularly the Japanese manufacturers, who understood the market much better, could produce at a much lower cost. It turned out the brand of Harley-Davidson was not so iconic, you know, in different parts of the world. But what they did is they recovered quickly. They kind of learned from their, you might call it, they've called it an arrogant blind spot. And they went in and they really did a very good job of turning it around. So they were able to capture market share in those parts of the world. And as I can say, just being over there, you know, they've actually got a very good niche of the type of market that they want there. And they've begun to manufacture some of their parts over there, and they've, I think, created a good blended business model as they recovered from their mistake of going global. And never underestimate the value and power of your brand. That's another one that sort of slides into the same thing. It turned out Playboy had, for a time, the third most recognizable brand after Coca-Cola and McDonald's.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And so if you go anywhere around the world, you will see Playboy logos on just about everything. And for a while, many of those were not licensed. It was just sort of a, quote, a compliment. But as Playboy began to erode in, you know, as all print media has, and also the founder, Hugh Hefner, was planning to turn the business over to his daughter, Christy. I was called in to help facilitate that transition and to kind of help reset the company's strategy, particularly globally, because Christy was very interested in that and doing it well. And what we learned was, you know, some very important things, and really their global expansion saved the company at a time when their domestic revenues were deteriorating. They since also went into the media business, you know, beyond print media, and have done very, very well. Christy has since actually retired from the company, and Hugh Hefner has bought it back, and it's now a private company again. But again, those moves that were made then, he is still working very, very hard to make that brand pay off, and it has done very well. He's a very, he's an interesting engagement, which has been written about, so I can talk a little bit about it. Another example, Swenson's Ice Cream, a San Francisco-based firm. Many of us may know it. I certainly remember it from being in San Francisco for a time when I was a student, and it's disappeared, virtually disappeared from America. But it's thriving over in Asia because, again, some people licensed it. And as you know, in Asia, you may know in Asia, most places don't serve ice cream for dessert. So the tourists over there in that part of the world, it's making it a very popular brand. So you want to never underestimate the value and power of leveraging your brand or understanding your brand and what you want to do with a brand as well as a product or a service, and include that in your strategic planning as you look beyond your local footprint. Issue number five, a global plan may be most cost-effective. Well, let me put it this way. What I meant this sentence to say is a global plan needs to be achieved usually within a reasonable period of time, and the most effective way to do that with the most effective price benefit could be through acquisition rather than internal expansion. There's a company that I work with, if you stay in hotels and you use a safe, there's about a 60% chance that product around the world will be this particular brand called L-Safe and Vincard. And what they've done to build that brand is not only continue to drive their market share, which has been steadily growing for about 20 years, but they acquired other companies. For instance, a company that had a patent on putting a power cord, I'm sorry, a power outlet inside the safe that was big enough for laptops or other devices, so that not only could you lock your laptop up in the safe, but it could be charged at the same time. And they put those in high-end hotels around the world. That was a very successful example of a global company, but doing some acquisition, and it enabled them to gain an important market share advantage in a really quick time period.
So it's paying attention to the market, wherever the market is, in order to meet it.
Yeah, and in some cases, recognizing before the market told them what they needed. I mean, any of us that's traveled with a laptop and actually, you know, wants to protect not just the data but the actual device, depending on where you are. I know for years I left them on the desk. I did have one stolen once. It was a, you know, couldn't figure out who. They didn't have security cameras. Shortly thereafter, I began to visit hotels with safes that you could actually plug the computer in, so it was charging while you were away from your room. I thought that was a pretty smart idea.
That is.
Anyway, so acquisition is a good way to expand if you find the right one at the right price, of course. Issue 6, not everyone thinks like you do, and when you're thinking of expanding your sales or your global distribution, you should really look at reaching out inside your company for people with diverse either backgrounds or knowledge of other markets, or bring in distributors who have experience with those parts of the world, or consultants that you know, you trust and have, you know, worked and sometimes lived in the places where you're thinking about working. It's just an important aspect that should be considered. It's again something that very often privately held companies, sometimes even publicly held companies, you know, folks in the C-suite tend to think, they tend to think that people think like they do. It's a human trait. We all kind of do that. And what has been so important, I think, in looking at success stories in the last several years, you know, sometimes an acquisition can be driven by a passionate customer. There was a sort of an accident that I talked about here of a passionate partner willing to take a risk. In-N-Out Burger, those of you in local Southern California areas will know that brand. If you happen to run across it, you want to try one. Anyway, one will open soon in Singapore because a high-net-worth individual came over here and said, this is something that I want to put in our city. So that was an unplanned expansion. That person is going to fund it. There is virtually no risk to the corporate headquarters, which is a privately owned firm. I had the privilege of working with some of their executives years ago before they experienced a really terrible accident in a private plane, bringing up the importance of succession planning, but that's for another topic. But anyway, In-N-Out is going to open in Singapore. I suspect it will do well. That may guide them in their desire to explore expansion, but they have really resisted expansion because their business model being very simple, all fresh ingredients and sourcing those kind of ingredients in other parts of the world can be difficult, just like sourcing certain parts is difficult. I had another, that's another story. Let's go on to issue 7.
Oh, actually, Tom, a question here.
Sure.
What if senior people have this vision, want to expand globally, and then get everybody excited about it. They put the word out for doing it, and then all of a sudden something happens, and they're not able to do it for some reason. They realize it's just not the right move, timing or something.
Well, it's a really great question, you know, because obviously volatility today is the new buzzword for the uncertain times we live in. I think it's important that as firms begin to explore any new initiative, any new strategy, that they kind of keep the they keep it close to their vest. They do the professional work. They have a group, you know, a task team of people, hopefully inside or outside or both the company, that are willing and able to keep it quiet. Because you don't want to put the cart before the horse. You don't want to damage your brand by indicating you'd move into a certain market and then have to retreat from that. You wouldn't want your suppliers to get geared up to help you with a global expansion and then find out that they've made some investments in raw materials that you now can't use. So we live in a very interrelated system. You may have even hired a salesperson. It happened just recently where I was talking to a salesperson. He relocated, came to another job, and they actually decided, the firm decided to take his product line and discontinue it. And he was pretty anxious, you know, because he'd really, it had been announced that he was coming, and the decision to kill the product line occurred without anyone in his chain of hiring him knew. It was a pretty big breakdown. Now, they handled it really well. They went to the existing customers. They told them what the transition plan was. They went to this guy. They told him what his interim job was going to be. They, you know, compensated him well. So, I mean, they recovered. But, again, you want to, I think, do this planning in such a way so that if you do have to pull back, you've got a very good story. You haven't damaged your reputation with your supply partners or your internal employees. And then sometimes if you're considering expanding and it doesn't go the way you want, you have to stay the course, because you just can't afford to move out of that market, and you have to be prepared to take some losses for a while until you can catch up with you know, the realities of that market expansion.
So these are the type of things that could be unforeseen, but you try to plan for the unforeseen in a sense.
Yeah, that's right. You have backup plans. You have plan Bs. And again, you try to be strategic in your thinking. You do something which some of us call, you know, you start at the end result and work backwards rather than starting from where you are and working forward. And then you do some what's called scenario planning, so that your execs and your people in charge of these moves are really well-versed, and so therefore they can be agile and they can adapt to marketplace conditions pretty quickly, which is a good lead-in to issue number 7.
Right.
Don't rush it. You want to make sure that you've got, you know, the infrastructure in place within your organization, that you've got people trained at Xerox. We had a directed development program where we would move people in different parts of the world, two different parts of the world, 2 or 3 years in advance of the job that we were planning to give them, so they would have some global experience. We also, at Xerox, did global planning by having people in the local regions do some, you know, data gathering and some planning, and then we would roll that up into a corporate plan, but very methodically. And we found that the best way to do employee development around global expansion was to involve high-potential people, no matter what function they were in. They didn't have to be in sales. They didn't have to be in supply chain. They could be in finance. They could be in R&D. It didn't make any difference. They were just smart, high-potential people. And so by putting them in a planning context, we could train them, we could observe them, we could help them meet and get to be known by other people throughout the company. It was great developmental planning. I still use that with my clients, so that if they're thinking about something, could be global, could be local, but a new aspect of their business, and they also want to grow their talent, that kind of creating cross-functional teams, seating it with people much lower than you would normally perhaps put people in a team, gives them a kind of interesting advantage, pride, and, you know, kind of a boost to their morale, making them feel very appreciated, and at the same time you get to use their input and give them exposure to other people within the organization.
Tom, a question just came in around recruitment.
Yep.
Recruiting is tough enough for any organization. This just compounded a bit going international. Any things you key points? I know that would be a whole discussion in itself, but any key points on the thought of recruiting, screening, all that kind of thing?
Yeah, I actually have a fair amount of experience with that. First and foremost, you need to understand what the jobs are independent of culture. I mean, someone who's going to be running a particular machine, whether it's in Norway or Shanghai or Dubuque, the skill set for that job is going to be pretty similar. So you want to start with what the skills are that you need, whether it's in sales or distribution, finance, IT, whatever. You just want to kind of make sure you know where that job fits in a process that you designed and want in that particular part of the world or as you expand your business. Again, it's very important that business people understand, and I'm sure everyone on this call does, that ultimately it's people and process. That's what makes a business like the double helix of a DNA molecule. It's process and people. It's process and people, and cultural differences and global trends and challenges, of course, play a part. And, you know, part of the genius of business and the art and science of it is understanding, you know, when you get the processes clear and you get the people staffed and sourced correctly and integrated correctly, then where are they doing it? I helped a company move their facility from Northern Europe to China a couple of years ago, and we dealt with these issues pretty deeply. Let me give you three quick answers to that, Dana. First of all, there are recruiting firms that specialize in certain regions of the world and, you know, a retained search sometimes is really an important investment. Second of all, using a service like yours, the company's language obviously makes a difference. This particular company that was moving their language of the company, even their owned by people off our shores, is English, as it is in many companies. So using instruments through the recruiting process can be, as you know from hopefully your experience with Lighthouse Consulting, is just invaluable. In fact, Dana and I worked with a multicultural group a few years ago.
That's right. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And they got a lot of value out of that. So sourcing also can be done through supply chain partners that already may be located offshore in regions where you're interested. They can be a good source of either contacts of local recruiters, or they might have people who are close to the action. I did a talent development program for McDonald's recently in their innovation center, and one of the things they would frequently do is make trades. They would give them a person from their corporate headquarters for a year, and they would get someone from a franchisee or a supplier, and they would do some, you know, intentional development by trading, getting to know the person. Then they could make it a full-time position if they wanted. Sometimes they did it for half a year. But, you know, moving people around the world is not cheap, so you want to make sure you're getting an investment out of it. But fundamentally, what you want to do is source correctly, understand the cultural differences that you're going to be dealing with based and overlaid on what we would call the fundamentals of the job, and then you need a multicultural leader. You need someone who's fluent. I don't mean in the language, but I mean emotionally intelligent. One of the programs I did, there were six cultures represented in the room and about eight languages. And when we came to a word like responsibility, we'd take our time and have it translated into all eight of those languages. because we wanted some of the fundamental meaning to be understood as transcultural. There's some business values, ethics, and beliefs and behaviors that do transcend culture, even though the habits of the local people are such that, you know, classic thing is in Japan, no one ever tells you no to your face. There's some truth to that, but when you have a sensitive leader who can read people, that doesn't happen. There's a deeper level of commitment that's created with these leaders who are adept because they've spent time even working here with people of different cultures and understand that language isn't, the gold standard is, if you're a leader, what counts is what people heard and interpreted from what you said, not what you said. So it's really important that the company begin to develop some sensitivity to other people. They don't have to be planning an offshore unit. They just have to know that as part of talent development, that kind of interpersonal agility is essential to do business anywhere, and it really helps if you're expanding globally. I don't know if I went off course there in answering the question, but I hope it gave you some insight. We're at number 8. What we were saying, be fact and data-driven rather than caught up in the emotions of wanting anything. I think the recent market corrections have made global expansion maybe less a fad and more a real risk-reward kind of operation. But using data, as we said, to hire people, very effective. Getting market data and consumer data, and which is, you know, pretty easily purchased these days. We are swimming in data. It's mining it effectively that's important. McDonald's, again, an example there. They expanded all over the world, of course, but in France they noticed they weren't doing as well as they thought they should. And so, lo and behold, they decided to introduce what is their culture over there. And now they sell wine. They have for years. But it dramatically increased their revenues because people would then go in to the place expecting that, you know, if they were an adult, they could have a glass of wine with their meal, lunch or dinner, and no one would care, you know, and obviously they don't serve underage kids. So it was a real kind of obvious, you know, duh, could have had a V8 kind of moment. And they talk about it inside the organization. Anyway, data and facts, just there's no substitute for those two kind of strands of the DNA molecule, people and process. Both of those have components that are data-driven, and certainly they have components that are subjective. But the more that you're able to be data-driven, the better. Number nine is remember your customer satisfaction paramount to success no matter what you do. You really want to think ahead. You know, you want to give customers not what they want today, but what will delight them tomorrow. Apple, of course, is our gold standard example of that. But in what you do, whatever you do, you want to be noticing what trends your customers are experiencing. Working with a company, they were seeing concerns raised about having to ship orders in a hurry. They looked at their freight options. They redesigned a couple of processes in that situation. They were able to make their customers more satisfied, and their margins went up. It's, you know, Walmart's a good example. Years before it was fashionable, they began to practice sustainability by asking their vendors to reduce the amount of packaging, lowering the carbon footprint of everyone before they, you know, went very public with it. They've been able to expand globally with much less drama than they were experiencing here in the United States. They've become a kind of brand that's known for its corporate social responsibility. When you expand and work globally, it looks sometimes like they don't have the standards that we have in the United States, and so you can, quote, cut corners. The companies that I work for realize that ultimately we are going to have universal standards like ISO certifications and some common and practical standards about, our carbon footprint and our pollution and our other behaviors that constitute what's called the triple bottom line, focusing on people, focusing on profits, and focusing on planet. And your customers are going to respond to that at some point. So as you go global, you want to look not just at what's done today, but what might be done in the future so that you're positioned yourself to grow with the standards that are both being developed locally but implemented globally. In issue 10, the obvious is anytime you do something new, you want other people to look over your shoulder and do some mind melding and kick the tires and whatever other kind of classic metaphor I can use, particularly global strategic planning. You want people with different perspectives and different styles and different cultures. It doesn't even have to be the culture or the country you're moving into. You just want diversity. There's something very powerful about a group of people who aren't the same. And I think we're all learning that. I hope so. I think many rapidly growing companies have lost significant money and momentum by not taking the previous 9 issues seriously. I promised here to give one example that I just didn't want to put on the slide. I'll just be circumspect a little bit, but you can probably fill in the blank. But there is a brand here in the United States, very well known. They sell certain kind of frozen dessert product, and they thought they could leverage their brand here, combination franchise and company-owned companies, a lot of complexity in that, and they really stumbled. They made some mistakes because they moved too fast without following some of these 9 principles. And these are smart people, but they've kind of regrouped now and are going to do it much more methodically, and as a result, they'll be much more profitable in the long run. So, smart people need other smart people to help them be even more successful. That brings us to the end of the things that I was thinking about as Dana asked me this question.
Tom, so the key to minimizing risk is being open to, first of all, following all the steps 1 through 10, but working collaboratively, sounds like.
Yeah, and thinking collaboratively. You know, there's always this thing, I have an open door policy. Well, in my work, I want my clients to have an open mind policy.
Ooh, that's good.
I want there to be a kind of willingness to get intentional about expanding the way we think about things. You know, the secret of change, which is not so secret, is you can't change anybody else. You can only change yourself, and that's damn hard. And the way we change, and the way anybody changes, is they change first the way they think and then the way they act. So the ability to learn from other people is one of the easiest way to expand a mindset or look at some perspective from a different angle. It's through interaction. It's through this dialogue. It's through the discovery of facts, based on collecting data, analyzing data together, that we learn. And the most important kind of competency in any kind of change is the agility of our own thinking, is the willingness to adopt, just for the hell of it, another person's point of view, to see what the world looks like through their eyes. You don't have to, counter your own thoughts, but you just want to kind of get that, what would it look like through that person's point of view? and step into their shoes somehow, some way, for a while, metaphorically. Have that inform your point of view rather than be rigidly stuck to your point of view. It's amazing how many smart engineers need to learn that lesson, sometimes the hard way, because they think they're doing their job based on their view of this, you know, kind of very logically constructed world that they call the truth, which is really just their reality. And when they're put in a position of planning, which is not doing, it's planning, and they have to listen to other people's points of view, and they have to actually see the validity of another point of view, and maybe through some, you know, constructive dialogue or even some spirited debate, they get to see that they're not necessarily always right, or that their point of view isn't just the only one that's viable, because there's a lot of right answers. And so it's this ability to grow as individuals with the ability to expand our different perspectives that give us the raw energy and talent to make changes, whether it's planning to operate globally or just upticking the way your organization functions. It's that kind of basic core, what I'd call competency, that drives successful expansion, global expansion, through a process of planning and execution.
Wow, I love that. Open mind policy. That's beautiful. In just a few minutes, we're going to conclude this show and turn the recording equipment off, and we'll be opening up the line so you'll have an opportunity to talk with Tom. You'll see on the screen an area you can register for our upcoming April 23rd open line program, which is entitled, Is Your Hiring Kit Complete? Please sign up today, reserve your space, let others know about it, colleagues, friends, association members. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Tom and I want to thank you for your time and for all the valuable ideas that were shared today. If you'd like to contact Tom to further discuss any specifics about your industry, your team, spend some one-to-one time. If you currently are global in certain markets and want to refine it, talk to Tom. If you're thinking of going global, talk to Tom. You can save.
Thanks. And Danny, you know, we probably should have told him that you and I have this deal that if anyone from these calls calls me or contacts me and wants to talk, there is no charge for an initial consultation to get together and get acquainted and figure out what you want or what you're thinking about.
That's right.
So, you know, it's part of the kind of great organization that Dana has put together here, that you get to actually, you know, we can sit and talk or sit on the phone or Skype and talk and whatever, and figure out, you know, where what you want to know about, and whether I or any of the other people from White House could give you what you need in a way that makes sense.
Thank you, Tom. Very well stated. The information shared today is the property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in San Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics like this one today, came in from folks that were requesting information on it, just let us know. We'll make it happen. We want to thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track open line program. I want you to hold the line. We're going to open up the line and want to wish everybody a great day. But for those of you here, just wait one second. We just need to turn the recording equipment off. We'll be right back, so please stand by.